I'm Paul Landcor with PodTech.net, and with me today, Frederic Verone. He's Managing Director with Bearing Point. Hello again, Frederic.
Hi, Paul. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. And today we're going to talk about the battle of IT best practices. And my question for you right off the bat is, what is the battle of IT best practices?
Well, it's definitely the topic that comes up in discussions with IT professionals quite often. But I truly believe that the battle itself is somewhat won, or rather that there was no battle indeed. There are a number of best practices out there that I believe an IT organization needs to draw upon, not one being better than the other, but rather providing a set of reference material, if you will, or toolkits that an IT professional can leverage to do his or her job on a regular basis. One thing I want to mention, actually, around best practices, it's important to remember that best practices are, by definition, past practices. So they become a good, solid foundational base for people to make decisions, but they are they're not set in stone, if you will. They evolve, and one needs to use them with a grain of salt and apply them to the environment. It's not always the case that it's directly applicable. And as they evolve, one needs to keep in mind that this is just providing them with a potential solution, but can always be adapted to their current environment. The practices are indeed, and actually best practices, I would even suggest that they are best practices and common practices. I'm not even sure that we can really find out of the common practices the best one. I'm not sure that we have what we need to measure how good they are. I think that they are practices that are understood by people that are referred to as being best practices. They probably are the better ones. I'm not sure they're the best ones. But they constitute the basis for our IT professional to deal with a very changing world, changing because the technology is changing, the requirements are changing, it's evolving quite rapidly. Those practices are also good, strong references for a number of people to deal with the complexity of reality. And we'll see that a bit later on when we talk about putting those practices together, because that's really what it is about. It's to deal with that complexity. And therefore, I don't believe that just one set is really one set of best practices that is really sufficient. And it's pretty much a tool that people use to help them balance through the day the planning activities versus the reacting activities that they have in their day-to-day job. One thing I want to mention is here we're really focusing on this podcast, Paul, on the practices around IT in the IT world, if you will. So it's typically practices that are pertinent to the project management domain or discipline, the coding, development, testing discipline for applications, or implementation discipline as well for those applications. The operations of technology in the corporate world, pushing that operations domain or discipline all the way up to the service management aspect and how to support the business, and then all the different practices or recommendations that are made around quality and control. So that's kind of what I would like us to discuss today, is more those practices. I'm sure there are plenty of other best practices out there, but that's what I will limit the discussion on today.
Okay. And what you're suggesting is that not only is there not a battle, but there might not even really be best practices. So that's one way that people need to reorient their thinking, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, I think there are practices. Well, first, there are practices that are common that people tend to believe in. And then out of those practices, depending on the needs of the organization, the goal that a given project has, and so forth, some practices are probably more appropriate than others. There's nothing out there that really can measure how good the practice is. I think it's a combination of experience and situations that make a practice relevant, and it just provides, frankly, a framework for people to start thinking about how they can do things. They probably are better practices than others, probably are worse practices than others, but I don't think the term best practices is really aligned with what we do today. Actually, in our world, working with clients, we tend to avoid the term best practices. It's really common practices or a set of references that we usually discuss about.
Well, given that, given all we've discussed here, what should an organization do to understand the common practices that would best be applied to the needs of that organization?
Well, first, like I think I was mentioning just a bit earlier, is not one practice fits all needs, one set of best practices fit all needs. They all have kind of their specialty, if you will. So maybe I can mention a few that I tend to refer when we talk about those different topics. For instance, in the IT operations world, and we have had a number of podcasts in this series when we talked about this, we have a set of best practices referred to as ITIL, IT Infrastructure Library. So that's that is a set of best practices that is more and more accepted in the industry, started back in Europe, in the UK, if I'm remembering correctly, and now has pretty much gone all over the world and is being implemented in an IT organization. And it's really focusing on the operations aspect. They've come up with a new version 3.0, that just came out, this spring, that actually includes a number of other aspects that we felt were really important, such as the ability to provide services or actually to define services in a more advanced manner. Those services that would be delivered from IT organization to a business unit. So that's usually a set of best practices or so-called best practices that are referred to by the IT managers, IT operations folks. There are a number of others. For instance, COBIT is another one that's pretty well known as well in the IT world, which is really more around control of IT. That pretty much provides you with some specific control points that a number of people are using to assess if they are in control of their IT environment, and that is pretty well known as well across around the world, if you will. Others, for instance, pertain much more to project management and project management life cycles. It's more focused on the different steps that one needs to take between or from planning all the way to implementation, and can be applied to a number of different projects. In the software industry, if you will, or the system integration space, CMM is another pretty well-known methodology and maturity model, more so, that is pretty recognized. And there are some folks that actually go around and audit an IT organization and give you a rating in terms of your maturity level. This is very important for system integration providers, especially when we talk about offshore, where you want your IT service provider, your system integrator, to be at a very specific CMM level, for instance. And then you also have a number of practices that are more around quality, such, for instance, as the ISO standards. I'm thinking, for instance, at ISO 9000 and others that provide you with a number of recommendations on how to better document your processes and how you're going about those. And I'm not sure I mentioned, but for instance, Six Sigma is another kind of methodology, if you will, or set of best practices that comes with a number of tools that started probably some decades ago, I think at Motorola or in GE, if I recall correctly, that is now being applied in the IT space. So just to mention a few here. But right there, by looking at that, we can see that they all have somewhat their own objectives, if you will, their own purpose, and therefore there is not one that would pretty much encompass everything. So when an organization looks at its need and decides to leverage some of these best practices, they've got to understand their specific objective and pick the right set of best practices. Try to narrow down which one is applicable. I think also that not one is better than the others. So to kind of go back to the battle story that we were discussing about a few minutes ago, Paul, we don't think there is one that's really better than the other. I think it all depends on the situation of the enterprise and what we're trying to accomplish. I think there are some good aspects in pretty much all methodologies and all set of best practices, if you will. And that's by looking at all of them, or at least a number of them. Don't have to look at all of them, obviously, because there's quite a bit out there, where people can try to pick the best of each. I've personally done that with a number of my teams on projects, and there are some good tools out there that you can pick across multiple practices and kind of come up with something that's a bit more adapted to what the organization wants to do. I think what's important to note here is that an organization that is looking at its needs in that space and wants to make decisions as to what to use going forward is pretty much defining a framework by which its people are going to behave and decide going forward. So I think it's really important that a given organization spends the time to define what exactly they want to leverage out there. It's pretty much will become, that framework will become the vocabulary, the common language that everybody will use going forward. It will evolve, obviously, but I think an organization needs to be really clear as to what the definitions are. And that will allow the organization to better understand each other and therefore be much more efficient going forward. So it's quite important to view those best practices as kind of the common language, the set of common languages that people will be able to use going forward. And then again, this framework will also provide a mechanism that the organization can use to actually make decisions on a day-in, day-out basis. It will provide the key principles that would be discussed at the top of the organization, but then we percolate down all the way to the lower level of the organization so that without micromanaging everybody, everyone will tend to make decisions that help the entire organization to converge to its goal. It's really important. The strategy is set in the stratosphere sometimes, but it needs to come down to reality back on Earth, and that's by using those principles, those key tools, that actually folks in the organization can pretty much execute on the overall strategy. And then finally, it will constitute the way for the organization to measure progress going forward in terms of looking at the adoption of those best practices, maybe using them as a way to measure maturity, and then maybe more importantly, report on progress so that everybody understand where are we all going and what needs to still be done to get to the ultimate goal.
Well, I wonder if you could give us an example down here on Earth again, as you say, where an organization has assessed its needs, taken a look at what is available out there in terms of this vocabulary of maybe better practices, and how it would assign that vocabulary to its specific needs.
The example I was thinking about was in the area of productizing technologies. We're working with a number of IT organizations that tend to be shared across multiple business units and are making a lot of investments for heavy-duty technologies such as data centers, networks, mid-range systems, mainframes, software, everything that indeed costs a lot of money for the organization, and therefore trying to optimize the overall efficiency of this equation is at the heart of their challenge. One of the approach that we are suggesting is probably the most effective in that space is to match the supply, what this IT organization deploys and operates, with the demand, what the business units are looking for, by productizing the technology and pretty much turning the IT shared organization into a product company, if you will. Actually, probably should not use the term company, but a product organization that understands the value proposition of what it operates and can articulate that value proposition to the business unit. In the meantime, the business unit then would understand what that value is and what the cost is associated with that value, and therefore be positioned to make the right decision as to which product to use. So productizing technology, I think, is critical to make the IT organization much more efficient. Well, in that particular case, a product has different characteristics or can be looked at from different lenses. As a salesperson, I would sell the product to the business unit. I need to be able to articulate the value proposition. I need to be able to understand what the market demand is. So I'm probably going to wear more of a product marketing type of hat. And in that particular context, the best practices are coming from the marketing world, if you will. They will come from the product management lifecycle. And I will have to look at this S-curve that we've seen in that particular space. So I will organize myself across that particular S-curve. And there are a number of best practices there, or at least, like we said a bit earlier, practices that are commonly accepted to manage that S-curve and manage the product. In the meantime, if I wear a different hat and I wear the operations hat, I wear the hat the person has when he or she is actually managing and operating that product day in, day out. So in an IT organization, could be, for instance, a data center or a series of mid-range systems or a middleware type of product, whatever the case may be, I'm going to want to look at the operations aspect, and therefore I'm going to probably have a life cycle that is more around the asset management, around acquiring an asset, managing this asset, and then decommissioning that asset when it's come to its the end of its life cycle, of its lifetime, if you will. That's more of an ITOL type of hat that I will wear. It's going to be a different life cycle with different series of best practices. In the meantime, if I go to the next level, if I'm more on the engineering side or the buyer side from that particular IT organization, I'm going to want to be on the lookout for new technologies, new solutions that will support that product. So I will have a different hat again. I will be much more interested in the hype lifecycle, which is around technology adoption, and I will focus on this particular set of best practices to get the best out of the marketplace for my operations person to operate and for my salesperson to sell. The three examples I just mentioned here, they're pretty much looking at the same thing, but they're looking at it through different lenses, and they're using and they're referring to different methodologies, life cycles, and best practices, and they have to do so because of their function. Now, they all have to understand that they're pretty much talking about the same object, about the same thing, but they're combining the different toolkits, if you will, or set of methodologies that exist out there to try to get the most of it. So that's the example I wanted to take to somewhat illustrate what we're talking about here. Not one set of best practices is better than another. I think they're applied differently, and one needs to know exactly why they're applying it so that they can make the best use of it.
So once somebody has made these determinations at an organization, where do we go from there? What happens at that point then?
Well, try to be simple and hopefully not too shallow and too high level. I think the first thing I want to kind of go back to is the fact that there should be no debate. I mean, it's been resolved. There are so many different set of best practices and methodologies out there that I think people should not really debate that too much. I think the idea would be more around trying to focus on selecting it, so we can talk about this. And then once it's selected, it's pretty much around adopting it. And I think that's the most important part. So on the selection aspect, looking at the different needs as to what the organization wants to do will help define which one is more aligned to its culture. For instance, I was taking Six Sigma as an example. It's a great tool, but it's pretty heavy. And if you implement the whole Six Sigma methodology, there's quite of the good news is you have plenty of tools you can use, but there is quite a bit there. So you may want to actually kind of select a light Six Sigma version, or maybe adapt the Six Sigma method. Just take pieces of it that matter to you. That would be kind of somewhat of an overarching set of best practices, and then you can from there define some other best practices that are more pertinent to each and every area. But overall, there's no battle, like we said before. It's pretty much resolved. I think what people need to do is embrace them all, or the ones that actually pertain to their particular situation, and then kind of publish, if you will, a piece, a framework around those best practices, stating what the organization is going to use and how they're going to use those practices. So that's kind of the first step, and that's what we refer to as those frameworks that can help organization, like we said before, you know, make decisions on day in, day out basis, be able to articulate to everybody where they are, where they stand, where they're more mature, where they need to work, etc. So that's kind of the first step. I think then it's around adoption. And adoption is, I think, the crux of the matter. It's around training people, obviously, but it's also understanding that there are fundamentals you can train people on. But then after that, there are two other aspects that I wanted to mention. One is that in some cases, if I take ITIL, for instance, it's a pretty complex set of best practices, and it's somewhat difficult to know for sure how to implement it, if you will. I always take that example where you have all these words they can put on the fridge and kids can play with it, but doesn't mean that they know how to construct the sentence. Well, ITIL is a little bit like that. So you need a bit of guidance as to where to start the sentence, if you will. How do you start an ITIL implementation or an ITIL transformation? And that's why I believe that not only do you need to have your set of best practices and your framework and agree with it, or at least have the leadership of the organization agree with that and then communicate it to the rest of the organization. But you probably also need a number of experts, people that have experience with the different aspects of the framework that you've picked, that you've decided to go with the vision that you have in mind for the organization. So trying to do it all on your own is often difficult. I think leveraging experts, people that have used those set of best practices, is really critical. And then I think the second piece is, and I did allude to it just a little bit, is the importance of communicating. And communicating about those practices, about their relevance, if you will, about even sometimes their weakness, in the sense there could be a hole, but we all agree that there is a hole, and be able to understand how people will react to that and focus on telling them what the context is and how to leverage them, how to use them on a day-in-day-out basis. So it's kind of two or three layers, if you will, for this adoption. It's like you have the fundamentals that you can teach through training. You need to leverage the experts because those best practices come with people and experience behind it that you should leverage. And then you need to communicate around those practices so that people can really adopt them. I usually refer to a model that actually can be found in the public space. It was published, I think, back in 1998. It's the ADKAR model, awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, reinforcement. So I won't go too much into that detail. I'm sure listeners can go back to some books about this, but it's pretty much first is making people aware of why the change is needed, and then from there have them desire to support and participate in the change, and then give them the knowledge of you know how to change, and then the ability to implement these new skills and behavior, and finally reinforce that on a regular basis. So it's really around change management, pretty much. But once the organization has found its framework, its vision, and knows what combination they want to use, then it's a matter of bringing everybody else on board. And I think using that model is pretty useful to actually support the change.
Well, Frederick, I appreciate taking time out today and helping our listeners to sort out some of what's going on out there in terms of IT best practices.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Frederick Verone is Managing Director with BearingPoint.